Alrighty, welcome back everybody to Brief and Not So Brief. I'm Seth.
I'm Ethan.
And this time we're going to be talking about movies that we think should have performed better at the box office. So, what movies are we going to be talking about, Ethan?
So, our three movies that we're going to be talking about today include Edge of Tomorrow, Annihilation, and Dread, which, if I'm correct, Edge of Tomorrow and Dread came out about similar time within the
It was a couple years, actually.
And then Annihilation is more of a recent release, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about some of our thoughts about the movie, some stuff about why it actually didn't perform well, whether it be its competition or anything else that plays into that. And then also maybe some of our favorite parts or stuff that we wish was different.
Yeah.
And so it should just be a pretty general what we thought and what could be better.
What do you want to start with?
I will start with Edge of Tomorrow. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, so this one came out in 2014. Came out right around D-Day, actually.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of imagery in it that was similar to, you know, it was definitely trying to evoke the D-Day invasion, Normandy invasion.
Well, I mean, when I first saw the trailer, we were watching Sun Movie. I was like 13. I don't remember what it was. And we saw the trailer for it in the theater. And I was immediately like, we need to see this movie.
Right.
I mean, at that point in my life, every 13-year-old boy wants to see action with aliens. You know, it's all out. It's fun. But the movie kind of shocked me. It surprised me because it had a lot more to offer than just, you know, lots of gun shooting, Tom Cruise running away from things. You know, it wasn't just that. And so,
but it also had that.
So. It did have that. And so, you know, that obviously that made it a lot better. For me, my dad will talk about some of the reasons why it didn't perform as well. But I think that, or at least it actually, when you look at any ratings or the general kind of population and what people think, it's always been really positive. And there's actually reviewers out there who would even be like, you need to go see this film because it is so much better than people have built it up to be or how it's been perceived. And so it's actually one of my favorite action movies of all time. And it's lived up to that just because of every single time there's some humor that always gets there, mm-hmm. but the action scenes are excellent. Yeah. And I think that one of my favorite parts is, you know, Tom Cruise, he dedicates himself to his action roles. And so the stuff that they do in the movies with him and Emily Blunt, they have some great chemistry on screen, some great scenes together. You mind if I talk about kind of what I wish could have been better with the movie? Because I have an opinion on the ending.
Yeah, why don't we get back to that? You're not letting me talk at all here.
Okay, whatever.
So I will say that, and this is a good thing, I guess, to note, is the IMDb score on it, 7.9 out of 10 mm-hmm. stars. You know, that's a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, well, IMDb lots of times is a lot stricter. I mean, mm-hmm. look at Rotten Tomatoes, it's like 91%, I think. That's really solid.
Yeah,
there's a lot of movies that when you get above 90, that's some pretty legendary status.
It is, yeah. And talking about the actual performance of this one, it did $370 million worldwide, but only $100 million domestically mm-hmm. against a $178 million budget.
Yeah. I think part of the reason that it is a little bit more popular, you know, outside the country.
Worldwide gross, right?
The worldwide was because it's based on a book that it is written in Japan, right?
Yes.
And so I think that had a lot to do with it because they were familiar with the story. Mm-hmm. They were familiar with that being released. And so that was what kind of shot it off. But mm-hmm. then people in the U.S. didn't really know too much about it.
Yeah.
And especially it's kind of a shocking thing because, you know, any movie Tom Cruise is in, you're kind of expecting to see a lot of money. But
I think this one came out not all that long after Oblivion. And
that
I think
wasn't the greatest.
I mean, it's a fine movie, but I think there's just some Cruise fatigue at some point, and he's a weird guy, you know. but also the title, that's one of the problems, right?
Yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Where it's based on the book called All You Need Is Kill, which I can't say that
much better title.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great title for a book, but it sounds like it's Japanese, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think when it released in Japan, they called it All You Need Is Kill. Mm-hmm. But some of the marketing, I feel like, was way off with it, right? The trailer was good. I loved that first trailer we saw where it had that, this is not the end.
Mm-hmm. Cool. The greatest thing, and unfortunately, there's a lot of problems with marketing and trailers these days, is it gives everything away in the trailer.
Right.
Which is why, if you're a serious film fan, you're going to watch the first trailer, and that's it. Right. And sometimes even no trailer at all. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who, when movies are coming out, they're highly anticipated, they'll stray away from the trailers because they know that in order for them to release trailers, they have to, you know, the producers and the directors don't even get to have a say in what right. the trailer's made with mm-hmm. and, you know, what is put in. And a lot of times you'll see trailers that you'll watch the trailer, you'll be like, oh, you know, that probably didn't reveal that much. And then mm-hmm. you watch the movie, you're like, oh, wow, that was the best scene was in the trailer.
Yeah.
And I think that with Edge of Tomorrow, you know, you saw the trailer, you saw who the actors were, you saw the main premise, and that was it. You know, you didn't really have a clue for what was going on.
Right.
Because there was very little dialogue in the trailer, I remember. It was basically just saying that there's a war and that you're not going to win because mm-hmm. there's some other, you know,
there's force. More than you remember. I actually watched the trailer the other day. It's like a 2-minute trailer.
Yeah.
But it doesn't give away absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. And
it's what a trailer's meant for, is to give you a hint for what the movie's going to be about. And so I thought that was done really well.
So you want to know the real thing that sunk this movie?
What did it come out against?
The Fault in Our Stars.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Teenage sappy romance movies. And, I mean, I don't want to look up how much money that movie got because it's probably a ridiculous amount.
I mean, it crushed it at the box office that weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big problem even now. I mean, obviously, you can't really control when your movie is going to come out against certain films. Yeah. But, I mean, I think that even, like, currently, I mean, First Man was a movie that came out recently. Mm-hmm. That one got crushed mm-hmm. by Venom. You know, it's all about, you know, what's going to put people in the seats. And so it's a really interesting way to see how, even though these movies are higher rated than a lot of the movies that came out with, mm-hmm. it was just crushed because the general public was more interested in the other thing.
Yeah.
And so, it kind of goes to show, you know, what people are interested in at that point, mm-hmm. you know,
that goes into the whole design of the trailers too, because mm-hmm. like the marketing department has to understand what kind of film is this? Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes they'll put out a trailer and then people who are in the movie are like, that is not what this movie is about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the marketing people don't have faith in the movie, right? The studio doesn't have faith in the movie. Mm-hmm. And so they're just trying to do whatever they can, cut a trailer that will try and get some butts in the seats. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate.
And the most unfortunate thing about it is when you're having something, obviously it isn't original because it was based on a book, mm-hmm. but it's not a sequel. It's a lot easier for a sequel to release a trailer that doesn't release too much because they've already seen the first one.
Yeah.
And so they know they're going to get people in the seats, especially if it's a mainstream right. audience. And so, from Edge of Tomorrow, and actually I think it's renamed to Live, Die, Repeat. Like, both of the names I think are included on the title mm-hmm. on the DVD.
Yeah, when we bought it on Blu-ray, it said Live,
and
Die,
Repeat. And so the movie, it's kind of original because, I mean, it was, like I said, it was adapted from a book, mm-hmm. but not many people knew about it. They just saw, oh, Tom Cruise is an action movie.
Yeah.
And so because it hadn't been discussed before, they had to do something that was going to get people in the seats, and unfortunately, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we really did any recap for what the movie's about, so could you quickly kind of give us a synopsis?
Yeah, I can do that. And, I mean, I guess this is something we should tell people we didn't really tell them up front. It was, any movie we talk about, just consider it spoiled, right? If we're going to do, like, a deep dive on a brand new movie, we'll probably try and stay spoiler-like for part of it. Mm-hmm. But for any of these movies that have been out for any length of time at all, we're going to spoil them. So, kind of a recap of Edge of Tomorrow. Tom Cruise finds himself on the front lines of a war against aliens. In his first battle, he gets drenched in alien blood as he dies, and then finds that he's not dead anymore. And he wakes up and keeps repeating the same day over and over, eventually finding out how he can use the knowledge that he builds up in those days, along with a person that he meets, mm-hmm. in order to figure out what's happening to him and defeat the aliens.
Yeah. So he basically goes from just a major who isn't really battle trained, right. who by the end of the movie is the most skilled warrior ever on right. the face of the earth.
Yep.
And so it's nice to see that character arc. And so do you want to just talk about some of our favorite scenes, or do you want to talk about, you know, the ending and what we thought could have changed a little bit?
Yeah, let's do that, because you wanted to talk about the ending, because this is the part that people, the major objection that people have, and it's one of the main differences between it and the book.
Yeah, so I haven't had the privilege of reading the book, but mm-hmm. I've heard it's very different. Mm-hmm. Throughout the whole movie, obviously, he keeps repeating, and about the last third of the movie, he eventually gets into a wreck with his other co-star, Emily Blunt, who's mm-hmm. Rita Vitasky, is the other main character in the movie. They get into a car crash. And he bleeds out and has to go to the hospital and get blood supplemented.
Which kicks him out of the loop.
Yeah, so it kicks him out of the loop because the alien blood is now out of his system. So he doesn't die. He just gets this blood in him, which is explained earlier in the film. It kills the power. Mm-hmm. And so basically they have to take whatever power they learned, or any knowledge they've learned throughout the first two-thirds of the movie, in that one last try that they have to finally kill what is called the Omega, to destroy the alien's ability to repeat the day mm-hmm. and save the world, really.
Right.
And so the ending, basically, they are successful in dropping a bomb into the Omega, which at the very end, though, he gets killed once again, or the blood goes over him again right as the explosion happens, right? Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you see that, you're like, oh, he's going to survive. He'll repeat the day, but everything goes back to, instead of it being chaos and war, it's the aliens have collapsed. And right. So it's kind of a happy ending. Personally, I'm not the biggest fan of happy endings. I like the more, you know, not cliffhanger, but just kind of like, oh, wow, that happened. You know, it's a little bit of a deeper, and it's a kind of mournful ending. And so I personally wish that they had ended the movie with him dying and not repeating the loop, because he's gone through all this and it's almost kind of a release from this pain of repeating the days, because, you know, at that point he's done it for, I don't know how many days. They never really say,
no,
but it's implied, you know,
it's a long
time. Yeah. And so, I would have preferred that he would have died at the end of the movie and would have ended with his death and nothing else, because not only is it satisfying for his character, but you never really know what's going to happen after that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also, you know, people are like, oh, but I want a sequel. Mm-hmm. I don't want a sequel. I think it's a great movie by itself.
Yeah.
I don't want sequels to movies that don't need a sequel.
Yeah.
And so, I think the ending would have worked really well if they had just cut it right there. But as it is, I'm not going to knock it down a couple stars. I think it's still a great movie.
I think it's still a great movie. I do agree the ending is a little bit of a cop-out because they wanted the Hollywood ending. And that's too bad. I would, you know, maybe one of them could have died and the other one not. And you need to read the book, and we'll talk about that another time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, you know, it's a good movie. I love all the scenes of Tom Cruise getting trained and getting shot in the head over and over.
Uh-huh.
It's really cool.
So. No, that's the thing. They have really good montages of way of also telling the story, not just super, you know, oh, he repeated the day, so we're going to start at the beginning every time.
Right.
Usually, they'll start where he got to last time, so it almost runs together like one day.
Yeah.
And so each time he gets further, they start with him getting a little bit further each time, so it shows a clear development, and then also has a couple scenes where there's not much dialogue, and it's a lot more just of him kind of realizing his fate, and it's a lot more emotional, which I think that is important, is some emotional attachment to the characters, because you want to feel for the characters, you want to feel for what's going on, and you don't want to just be like, oh, he's just another soldier, because that's the thing that he does get the character arc with, is he's starts out as, is he a major? Is that his rank?
Yeah, and he's like a, almost like a marketing guy.
Yeah, and so he gets demoted, sent to war, and he has no clue, he doesn't even know how to turn the safety off of his weapon at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
And by the end, obviously he's, you know, going hand in hand with Rita Vitasky, who's legendary. And so, you know, it's a great character arc. I love it.
It totally is.
It's
awesome. Both physically and the attitude of his character, right? Because he starts off with that guy who's who's like, no, I'm not really a soldier.
Yeah.
I can't go to the front lines. And he ends up sacrificing himself. And that's why I think the ending is a little bit of a cop-out, because it takes that away from him.
Yeah.
Where he got to the point where he's like, well, to end this war, I'm willing to sacrifice my life. And he was willing to. So I don't take that away from the character. I take it a little bit away from the movie. But
yeah,
I think we should probably move on.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to do...
Let's talk about Dredd next.
Dredd.
Yeah. Yes. We'll save Annihilation for last.
Yeah.
So Dredd was one that you hadn't seen. It's... I saw Judge Dredd in the theater, probably with your mom, when we were in college. And, I mean, it's craptacular. It can be enjoyed. It's silly, but it's really cartoony. And it's kind of before the whole modern wave of superhero movies
was, you know, get in into process. When you thought of the new, just all-out action, insane Dredd with Carl Urban.
Well, so, yeah, that's the thing here. And, I do want to talk about the production budget and give a little bit of recap as well.
Yeah.
So this had a $35 million worldwide gross, $13 million domestic gross against a $50 million budget. And that's really not very good.
Yeah.
It wasn't as wide a release as Edge of Tomorrow had. Edge of Tomorrow was in 3,500 theaters. Dredd was only in 2,500. But it was written by Alex Garland, who's written some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ex Machina, Sunshine, Annihilation, which we'll talk about in a bit here. And essentially, it's Dredd goes into a building, lots of bodies come out.
Yeah.
You know, he goes in with his partner.
Yeah.
Right. And it was an interesting decision here to remake, you know, to essentially say Judge Dredd never happened. Here's the real Dredd. Hard R. This is why you didn't see it with me in the theater. I'm trying to think if I saw it in the theater, actually. I may be part of the problem.
Yeah.
Because I think I watched it with Colin on video. But
I think this is one of the hardest R movies I've seen. There's only a couple other movies where it's this violent, but it's not like gross and over the. I mean,
there's a couple parts.
There's a couple parts that it's pretty nasty, but it's not just like cheesy blood squibs everywhere.
Yeah,
there's some really interesting stuff that the director does with the way that the slow-mo scenes are shot, which are awesome.
Yeah.
There's that scene where he goes in and shoots a couple guys and it, you know, slow motion through the cheek. You know, it's got some pretty gruesome stuff, but it's actually really interestingly done.
Yeah.
And so I think it was a new take on action for, even though it's not a new film, quote unquote, it's still something pretty interesting that I hadn't seen before then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... like I said, it's hard R, right? Lots of language, lots of very grisly violence, a couple sort of almost dreamlike sequences that involve sexuality of some kind, but it's not in your face.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's one of those ones where I look at it and I'm like, this is a really solid movie. I mean, like, it's only like 90 minutes long. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's got a good buddy cop kind of thing going with Dredd and Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that Dredd never takes his helmet off. It just stays true to that character. Like, he is that character the whole time.
And the other thing is that when you say buddy cop, when you first think of the term buddy cop, you're thinking like this kind of happy, you know, have fun and just do the job together. But the thing about Dredd is that even though he is this judge, he's still doing his job as an evaluator. I mean, evaluating her. I mean, you could go through the synopsis, just kind of a quick what the movie's about, but it's really straightforward. It's basically, hey, there's this new, you know, dystopian future in America, and there's some places that these people live in, and there's some drug war. You know, it's really straightforward.
It's cool, actually, when you think about it, because it's he's going out on an evaluation with this partner that's being considered for to be a judge, even though her scores in the academy are not good enough.
Yeah.
But she's a psychic, and they think that that's a good reason to consider her for it. And so he lets her choose what case they pick. And they happen to pick this triple murder at Peachtree's, which is this super high rise, 200-story building.
Huge can of worms with Mama.
Yeah, exactly. And this is Lena Headey from Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. That's where everybody knows.
That's just one of our little kind of favorite things that we feel like only we have seen. So
yes, definitely. But I like the fact that the mystery kind of slowly unravels and Dredd starts to figure out, wait, why this much trouble over one guy that they've captured?
Yeah.
And he realizes it's because he must know something that's really important. And it turns out to be that that's where the drug is being manufactured.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, you know, the script, the plot of it is really tight. The action scenes are shot really well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what didn't connect with this. I started trying to tease it out and I'm like, you know, it came out in September 2012 against End of Watch, which, you know, was a good movie, but it's not like that one did gangbusters either. A week later, Hotel Transylvania came out and made $42 million in its opening weekend.
Yeah.
Just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's
seriously.
Yeah. I mean, Looper came out a week after Hotel Transylvania, and it did really good business.
Yeah.
But what happened with Dredd? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed it just because, you know, lots of violence. It's fun. But then it was also fresh for me because I hadn't seen when it came out. But there's a lot of stuff here in the current day that tries to be super complicated and ends up not working.
Right.
But I do appreciate some movies. It knows what it is. It gets to it. Mm-hmm. And it just gets the job done. And this, it's like, we know we're an action film. We know we're going to have some cool shots with some just hardcore Carla Urban being, you know, BA.
Right.
And so for him to just go out, and my favorite part really of the movie, or at least when I know what kind of movie it's going to be, is the first 2 minutes. You know, he's out on his motorcycle thing,
right?
And the 911, what he connects to, control, right, is what he says it. They ask, do you need backup or assistance? And he's like, no, exactly. Just straight up, no. And that's when you kind of know, like, you know, he's something special, and it's kind of implied throughout the rest of the movie that he's a bigger deal even among the judges.
Right.
And so, great, great film overall.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. The other thing I liked about it was I pointed it out to you. In the movie, the first scene where you meet Anderson, she's in a different room, and she starts reading Dredd.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, emotions, you know, there's anger and stuff, but there's something else, and then the commissioner lady cuts her off.
What do you think that other thing is?
I don't know, and that's the thing that I love about it, because I said to you, that's as close as we get to an origin story for Dredd in this movie, which I think was fantastic. It's a great choice.
I personally think that based on the ending with him kind of, even though she technically fails because she, you know, loses her weapon. Yeah. She does multiple things, but she still, you know, was a judge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was successful in the mission that she set out to do with him. And I think the emotion she was going to describe is some sort of compassion or something, you know, not anger. I think it would be, I don't know if that's true, but I think it'd be something along the lines of...
See, I know more about this just because of I've seen Judge Dredd, and I know there's some, at least in that movie, there's interesting history about how he came to be, who he is, but I don't want to go into that. So anyhow, we think it's good and
enjoyable.
Yeah, enjoyable. I mean, but on the understanding, of course, this is not a kid's movie. This is you should not watch this with somebody under 17 in all likelihood.
It's quite out there.
Yeah.
Well, I think that kind of sums up what we thought of Dredd. Should we move on to Annihilation?
And so Annihilation just came out 2017, right?
I may have been 2018. But I know, I think it was 2017. I remember going to see that movie, and... I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, it was 2018.
It was 2018, okay. Mm-hmm. I wasn't quite sure what to think because I was a little bit nervous because a lot of movies these days are trying to just shove in female protagonists to, you know, just be like, hey, we need female protagonist movies.
Right.
I was really happy with this movie because they were not portrayed as, you know, damsels in distress. They were portrayed as strong and interesting.
Capable.
Smart.
Complicated.
Yes. But I think that goes to show what the whole theme of the movie is, which is kind of like each person has done something that is kind of deteriorating or kind of
self-destructive.
Self-destructive. Yeah. And so it's a really interesting story, and you can go over the synopsis because it is a little bit of a complicated one.
It's got some twists.
It's a straightforward story, but the twists and turns it takes throughout are pretty deep.
I didn't even really write down a recap for this one. I mean, it's a science team. A science/military team heads into this area called the Shimmer to try and investigate why people have been disappearing in there. But it's not about that, right? It's about the other stuff. It's about the self-destruction and stuff. It's a deeper movie than just these people are on a mission and the nuts and bolts of what that mission are and the details of it. That's not the important part.
Yeah.
And it's interesting visually as well. And that's something that you and I both come to appreciate in films, right? That it doesn't have to be telling you necessarily the clearest story if it's telling it in an interesting way and giving you interesting visuals to help tell the story.
Yeah. And the thing that, I mean, a brief kind of what the movie's about, we mentioned that it's just a scientist going into what is called the Shimmer to kind of investigate what's going on. And the kind of basic concept is that inside the Shimmer, it's basically a prism and all of the cells and genetics of every species.
It refracts more than light, right?
Just kind of mixed together, which is why there are probably two or three action scenes in this movie. They're all very intense, not very long, but they're awesome. And so the first one involves a crocodile cross-breeded with a shark because it's got a gator mouth, but it's got shark's teeth. And so that's kind of when you could figure out, oh, there's this a little bit different. The scientists analyze it and then move on. And, mentioning the cast is wonderful. I think that I'd only seen, I mean, Natalie Portman's kind of the main character,
right?
But other than that, there's some other people that have really been kind of on the scene lately.
Tessa Thompson. Tessa fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. But then also, one other lady, I can't remember the actress's name, but she's
Jane the Virgin.
Yeah. So from TV, you know, coming in on a more serious role. Yeah. Gina Rodriguez. And so, it was really great to see them in the movie and they all had terrific performances and really interesting, ways of going about to discover what their character motivation is. And then the second really awesome action scene, which was, I think, both of our favorite scenes,
right?
The bear mixed with I don't know what
that had a human voice box.
Yeah. And so
it was terrifying.
Yeah. So it basically mimicked a voice of what it had just killed, I think was kind of the thing. Yeah. And so, it lets out this roar kind of thing. And this girl thinks that I think it's a family member. She thinks it's a family member or something because it's significant to her. Or it might have been another woman on the squad. So she goes out to get it, and then this thing creeps in, and it kind of just sniffs everyone.
Well, and they're all tied up because the Gina Rodriguez character had gone loopy at that point. Yeah,
and so it's all really tense because you don't know what's going to happen. It's going to eat the person. And so there's this, I think the animal ends up just obliterating Gina's character. I think she eats her or something like that.
I haven't seen this movie since it came in the theater. Yeah. But I didn't mention the budget. So this was, it did $30 million against a $40 million budget. There is no worldwide gross because every place but the United States, it got released directly to Netflix.
Wow.
So it's like the studio just was like, we don't know what to do with this movie.
Yeah.
And just dumped it there. And so that's too bad. And it went, and even in the theaters that it released in, it had fewer theaters than Dread did. It was only in 2,100 theaters.
Wow.
It also went against the second weekend of Black Panther.
Yeah, which is one of the highest grossing films of all time now.
Yeah.
So obviously, Black Panther, great movie. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it's unfortunate that that many movies were kind of in danger one that weekend.
It's weird, though, because it had a really good trailer, too. It had that you know, did you see its form thing with Benedict Wong, who I love.
Yeah, and that also ties into the plot. It switches between just an interview with Benedict Wong, where if you put all those scenes together, it's probably 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's very short. Mm-hmm. But then it's interspersed with some past with Natalie Portman and Oscar Isaac, who's her husband, who has a significant part in the first discovery of the shimmer, and then just the present day scientific investigation. So it goes back and forth. It's a little bit complicated, but I think we want to talk about the ending and really the complicated part of what really happens the last 20 minutes of this movie, because it goes from being interesting, you know, one person's kind of getting taken off at a time by these different animals. Mm-hmm. They're turning into flowers. One of the girl turns into these flowers.
Yeah.
And the end of the movie, there's just two characters left. And the last 20 minutes, it's just, it's eye candy. It's so beautiful.
Yeah,
it's so interesting.
Well, it's very much like 2001 kind of into the wormhole.
Oh, goodness,
scene. Not as long, of course.
And not as, I mean, actually, it's just as creepy.
the other highlight for this, and in that part especially, is the score of the film. I think it's just fantastic.
Yeah. It's super eerie. I'm a big fan of using music to just, it almost makes you shiver. Like you're just kind of, you're terrified, but not in like a horror sense. You're just like kind of confused. You know, you're investing because you're confused and you just want to know what's going on. And so at the end, it's really hard to describe what happens because in the movie, she literally says she can't describe what happens because it's that weird and out there. Mm-hmm. And basically what happens is this kind of, I don't know how to describe it. This entity takes Natalie Portman's blood, multiplies, and basically just creates a kind of metallic copy of a human form, and it mimics her movement and eventually becomes her, and then she blows up with a grenade and it destroys everything. It's weird. It's really weird.
It's cool, though, because that whole scene is almost like a ballet, where they're almost dancing with each other, you know, shadow boxing. That was cool.
And the interesting thing, I read more about it and I listened to more stuff, is there's a scene where she tries to get out and she's pressed up against this door, and since it's mimicking her, it's behind her against the door as well, because it's doing the same thing. And it's more about the self-destruction. It's you are your worst enemy.
Right.
And so more about self-destruction, each character has kind of a different thing that is toxic about them, and goes in, and you discover that through the story, not through exposition or anything. It's just character dialogue, and it's really short, and it's really simple, which doesn't happen a lot. A lot of times they just have to put it through exposition, through, you know, some sort of reading, some sort of just narration. And so it was nice to see that their dialogue, and even though it was pretty dialogue heavy, but not in a bad way, it was just they got to the point, they got what they needed to be, and you knew what the characters were
doing. So this is, like, I was talking to our friend Colin.
Yeah.
And he didn't like this movie at all.
Yeah.
I suspect that part of the reason he didn't like it is he had read the book, and the book is not really adapted into this film. Alex Garland based it on his memory of the book, but he didn't refer back to it during the process.
Yeah.
And so it's possible that Colin was looking for specific things in the film that weren't there.
Yeah.
Where, like, you and I, one of the things that we like about it is we kind of like a movie that makes us go, I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about it.
To where I have to talk about it and I have to do some research. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just be like, oh, I know exactly what happened in that movie. I mean, one of my favorite movies, probably my favorite movie right now, is Get Out. And I've talked about that for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's so many different layers to that.
Yeah.
I love having a movie that I could just talk about for ages with anyone, and they'll just have to listen to me rant about it.
Yeah, you know? Yes, they will. I thought it was interesting. I was watching The Half in the Bag from Red Letter Media talking about Annihilation, and they made the point that this is a seriously female-led film, and nowhere in it does somebody say hashtag feminism.
Oh, thank goodness.
Like that awful Flash episode.
Yeah.
And they also talked about the fact that popular movies now tend to be just kind of dumb fun.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. We will probably do a couple episodes on movies that we think are dumb fun.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, one of our favorite movies to watch is UHF, and that is nothing
the
but dumb
fun.
Yeah.
I mean, Pacific Rim, dumb fun.
Exactly, yeah.
Real Steel,
yeah.
Dumb fun.
But so anyhow, the guy was saying that he thinks that a movie like this might have been more palatable, 20 years ago. I think...
Maybe not. I mean, I could see 20 years ago, but I could also just see if... Everyone had a different view on film than it does now, which obviously the main purpose of film and this, it's art, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
And we don't see it. We see it as entertainment, but we also see it as a study. We see it as something that we look at and it's constantly in our mind. It's like, it's knowledge to us. And so it's different for everyone, but these are the kind of movies that, you know, if you took your 13-year-old son to see it, it's not a lot of stuff that, like, there's not that much language. There's not nudity, really. Like, it's not. It's not that your younger kid couldn't see it. It's just they wouldn't get the same impact that you would if you were younger and you understood layers of filmmaking, how movies are made, what's supposed to be conveyed about each character, and so you just have to basically trust your audience, which is a lot to ask from the director because a lot of directors want to make original stuff, but at the same time they're like, okay, but I can make this adaptive thing and get four times as much money in one weekend. And so it's all about dedicating yourself to that original screenplay or that original script rather than backing up and doing something that has already been done.
Yeah. So I will say, just by the way of a content warning, I don't even remember how much language there is in this thing. There is no explicit nudity in it. There is a scene that's definitely... I won't even say it's sexy because it's a little disturbing, but it's a very erotic scene. And... so that's something to think about. You know, I wouldn't have taken you when you were 13.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's different because, like, for instance, like, we just talk about Dread. That's different because, like, you just don't want to expose your younger people to see that.
Yeah.
And then Annihilation is just different in the sense that there is some stuff, but it's also just, it's a smart movie. You've got to come in, and you can't just be sitting there like, oh, this is so much fun.
Yeah, this is not a movie that you could watch on the couch with your phone.
It's not a popcorn movie. It's get to your chair, grip your chair, and be intense the whole time, because that's my favorite kind of movie. Something that I got to think about constantly, thinking back to things that's going on in the movie.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a movie like this is more effective in the theater, right? Where you're a captive audience, kind of like when we saw Alien for the first time.
Yeah.
Right? That was a big highlight for you. And it was the kind of movie that I think, if I had tried to introduce that one to you at home, I don't know that it would have impacted you the same way.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that I saw that, was I 15? I think that was really my first start to true film love, because we went to a local place here in Oregon where we live is, it's this called OMSI. It's this big, huge theater that they do. It was a science fiction festival, and so they had tons of movies playing, and Alien popped up, and I hadn't seen any of the Alien or Predator or any of the, like, the really classic sci-fi movies. Yeah. And so he took me out to see Alien, and I loved it because that's what I really discovered. I'm more of a thriller guy. I like just really tense scenes where, you know, maybe there's a little bit of scares, but it's not in a horror way. It's just like, oh, you know, that thing's behind him and it's going to kill him. You know, it's just, it's different.
Creeping dread kind of stuff. Yeah.
Dad, would you like to just kind of talk about maybe your opinions quickly of each, kind of give maybe a grade or, what you thought of overall, just so the audiences kind of know what we thought.
I guess if I had to do like a letter grade or something, I'd be like, you know, Edge of Tomorrow, I feel like, is a solid A. I'd give it an A+, except I have some misgivings about the ending as well. Annihilation, I'd give it probably like a B+.
Yeah.
I really like the movie. I don't love it. And it's not one that I would necessarily rush out to go watch again. Dread, you know, we just watched it the other day. It was the second or third time I'd seen it. I mean, it's tremendous fun, but it's probably a B.
Yeah. For me, Edge of Tomorrow is really significant because to this day, it's held up as one of my favorite action and adventure sci-fi movies. And so for me, that's an A because I talked about the ending, about how I wish it could have been. But, you know, back when I saw it was an A+ because I didn't have the brain to know that an ending could have been different. And so you know, that's still one of my favorite movies of the action and adventure genre. One of my favorite movies of all time still, just because mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. Dread, it's different because it's all out action. It's mm-hmm. not really, you're not emotionally attached to characters on purpose.
Right.
But it does happen a little bit just because, mm-hmm. you know, that they go through some stuff in the movie. Yeah. And so...
I was concerned with that one that since you hadn't been exposed to Judge Dredd, because I haven't inflicted mm-hmm. that one on you, that Dredd would not hit in the same way. And it probably didn't mm-hmm. for you, just because you don't know what came before. You don't know how much better this one was.
Yeah. I don't have really anything to compare it to, but I can compare it to other action movies. And like I said, straightforward, gets to the point, and mm-hmm. hits it really well. And then Annihilation. Actually, did I really say what I thought of Dread? I mean, I think it's just, I think it was solid.
Yeah, I interrupted you.
It's different compared to other action movies, but I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And if I got the opportunity to watch it again, I probably would, just because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I don't really do letter or numeric grades. If I had to,
oh nice, you put me out there. You let me.
Okay, I'll give it a numeric grade. Edge of Tomorrow, I'll give it a 9 because I had a little bit of trouble with it, just on the ending. Dread, I give it a 7 or maybe an 8 just because mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun, but it's in a different genre, so it's hard to give it that 10 because those movies naturally don't have
all the aspects. It doesn't deserve a 10.
Yeah. I think you'd have to have it be longer and you'd have to have a lot of subplots, but at the same time, mm-hmm. that really wouldn't work with that kind of movie. Annihilation, on the other hand, I would say is probably an 8 because mm-hmm. I think it was really solid, had some really interesting stuff visually, and mm-hmm. then also... unexpected twists.
Mm.
And then also,
the ending, we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, should we?
No, let's do it now.
Okay, yeah. So Annihilation, there's also an interesting ending to that's the reason we talked for so long, mm-hmm. was after the movie, we're like, what the heck just happened? And so mm-hmm. Basically, at the end, Natalie Portman's character comes back to see her husband, who's been in a coma for this whole time, and he eventually wakes up, and they interact for a couple of minutes at the end of the movie,
mm-hmm.
and... she kind of comes to the realization that what she's seen as her husband, Kane, is not her husband. It's a copy of him. It's right. the alien of Kane that she interacted with earlier in the movie,
mm-hmm.
just like the copy of him that she's interacting with. And so she realizes that, and there's this awesome scene where she says, you're not Kane. And then Kane's like, I don't think so, and looks at her and says, are you Lena? And I think it should have ended right there with her, on her face, with kind of that like emotional, oh crap, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I am, because mm-hmm. at that point she may not have known.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, it's kind of really hinted at the end. They have this hug, and there's a shimmer in their eyes, which is basically saying, "Hey, these are the aliens you saw 5 minutes ago."
Yeah.
Which I really wish that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I think they had to do it for audiences who weren't as. Involved and was understanding the story completely to that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still enjoyed it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I wish it could have ended a little bit earlier, but I'd still give it an 8 out of 10 because I really enjoyed it.
Cool. Okay. So anyhow, if you want to reach out to us on Twitter, you can do that brief, not so brief, at brief, not so brief. And let us know, what did you think of these movies? And are there any other movies that you feel like this one should have done better at the box office? And we definitely encourage people to go out, you know, find Dread and buy it on Blu-ray or, you know, get it from a Redbox or something. And Edge of Tomorrow, you know, the same thing. Annihilation, watch it on Netflix. You know, it needs some views on there. And of course, your mileage may vary. We may come back to this topic at some point in the future. Or movies that we think are underrated even.
Yeah. I mean, if we see a movie that eventually we love and doesn't get any money, we might say, hey, this kind of comes under this episode that we discussed before mm-hmm. with the... you know, not as great grossing films. And so we'll see what else happens. But I think that these were the great movies. And so we'll see if anything gets added to the list at one point.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing this, Ethan.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.